Okay. My name's Mike Senyu, and you've all met Glow or have talked to Glow. She's in Iowa. I'm in North Carolina. We've been with HMPRI, actually. Someone just joined?
Vanessa Frazier.
In what town?
Howardville, Missouri.
Okay, good. We have been with this program since it began, and I'm a former EPA person. We've worked with brownfields when it was in its very first stages and have followed it all the way to present. We are not a job training grantee. We work with EPA and with communities. And our objective, that's HMTRI's objective, is to assist communities in developing sustainable job training programs. And so we're basically to service in cooperative agreement with EPA to help communities develop these programs. And the way we do that is we have an annual meeting every year of all the grantees and past grantees and actually members of the professional learning community, which this is part of. Those who attend these meetings are invited to that annual meeting in usually August or September. And at that meeting, we discuss methodologies and strategies of how we can make our programs better, how we could make them sustainable, what our problems are, how we could complain to EPA about what they're doing that's not realistic, or policies that aren't realistic, those type of things. And we go into workshops for a day and a half, and we come out with some interesting positions and summaries, critical issues that hopefully everyone goes home and develops a better grant program that they have. In addition to that, we have these professional learning community sessions. These are every 2 weeks. We're about, in this cycle, we're in our eighth cycle. This is about the fifth one in this cycle. We do 10 per cycle, so we've got a few more. We're going to have another one. They're every 2 weeks at the same time, same place, same phone numbers. You come in as you wish, and they are as you are available. The next one is going to be the third, 2 weeks from today. They're always at 2 o'clock. We try to hold them to 30 minutes. These two, the one today and the one on the third, may be a little longer. And if you need to leave after 30 minutes, just feel free to hang up. They're informal. We send everyone post-session notes. So if you got an announcement from me this morning that we're having this PLC today at this time, you're on the list, and you don't have to worry about it. You'll automatically get post-session notes until you tell me to remove you from the list. And you'll get announcements, and anything we get from EPA will send to you automatically. If you are not on that list and want to get on that list, just email me or Glow. My address is msenew@aol.com. And
okay.
Just say, put me on the list. And as I said, we have about 100 and almost 160 people that are in and out of the PLCs all the time. Many have programs going, and we've got several on the call today that have programs. Some have programs and are going to be re-upping, we call it, re-applying. Some are new programs, and they want to see if their community, if they really want to get into this. And part of our mission is to indicate to people what's involved, and sometimes people will listen to 5 or 6 calls and decide, we don't want to do this. This is just too much, or we're not ready for it. Sometimes they'll come in and they'll be with us for a while, and they may wait, and the next year they'll resubmit a grant. Our purpose isn't, and the purpose of these calls aren't so much on how to get a grant, but they're more of how to develop a good program. Now, it just so happens that EPA over the years has developed their RFPs pretty much per our approach to developing sustainable good practices And actually, in fact, the EPA proposals, the response to their proposals, if you can write the answers to all of the questions they ask and you can perform as they have asked in these guidelines, you're pretty much guaranteed a pretty sustainable program. They have been with us for a long time. They've done this for quite a few years, 12 years or so, and they've refined this down to that the common things that make programs work. Early on, there were many programs that weren't that successful, and they learned a lot early on. Now they pretty much have it down. Now, before we get too far into this, I also have to say that because we're a grantee in a cooperative agreement with EPA, but we have no policy or connection to EPA. Everything we say is strictly just our opinion and should probably be taken as our opinion and may or may not be their policy or even what they're looking for. What we try to do is have an open discussion among grantees that have grants and try to understand what seems to be working, what we've observed over the years that seems to be working, and how those programs that seem to be successful, what are their qualities? And so those are the kind of things we're going to talk about today. And what we try to do is have open discussion. The more people we have on the line, sometimes the more difficult it is, but we're going to I'm going to talk a little bit about these common qualities, and then what I'd like to do is have some open discussion from some of the grantees who have gotten grants to talk about their experiences, positive and negative, and to kind of, for those that are resubmitting, to talk a little bit about what I call landmines. Landmines, that those are those things that you want to stay away from in your proposal. If you're writing a proposal, stay away from that because, or don't go down that. It's a slippery slope. Or don't get involved in certain things because we've done it and it didn't work. So the whole objective of this is not so much to explain guidelines. Those have been done, and EPA's had two great webinars, which you can get recordings and you can get the PowerPoints. I think we've sent them out to the PLCs. You've been there and you've seen the slides. You've seen the guidelines. You've got a copy of the guidelines, and we've put those in the post-session notes for the PLC members. So we're going to the next step and looking beyond those notes, try to have an open discussion. If we could get ideas of what to stay away from, and while I'm talking, you might think about what things did you find that you needed to stay away from that were trouble? What things seemed to really work well? What things did you do that EPA or that seemed to go over really well? And particularly in responding to their request for proposals, what things worked. So with that, to give you an idea where we're coming from, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the qualities that we have observed that work and that seem to many grantees have. And you may want to consider if you're there or if you're a grantee and you haven't explored that, you know, some of those things that seem to work. One of the things that we've always noticed is that all of the really successful grantees, these are people who have been re-upped. When I call, say, re-up, I meant they've reapplied and received refunding. Originally, EPA didn't want to refund grants, but they found that some programs work so well that they said, we will refund grants that seem to be working well. They have to sit out a year. If you applied for a grant last year, you can't apply this year, but you just wait 1 year. But we found that those programs that seem to get funded year after year have been refunded maybe five times or so. They seem to have extroverted directors, or they have a personality, someone in that organization that's really an outreach person. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the project director, but there's someone, always someone, whether it's Art Shanks or whether it's Paula Paris or it seems like there are personalities amongst these really well-performing programs, Tippi Reed in Chicago. They are out there, and these people seem to be very much out outreaching. They're not the academics that want to stay on campus. They're out there. Many of them are really involved in local government. They're involved at the mayor's office. Some of the best ones what comes to mind is King County, for example, in Washington. They are so involved and entrenched in what's happening in government, city, state, federal government, very involved in programs. The women's programs are very socially involved. They know about the workforce investment boards. They're connected to them. They're connected to the city. They're certainly connected to the brownfield projects. And one of the things that I think is just a side is, and it's very subtle, but you have to remember that the funding for these programs, the $2.4 million, comes from Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response, OSWER, in EPA. OSWER, Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response, is exactly what the name says. It's Office of Solid Waste. Now, the Office of Solid Waste doesn't necessarily want you training people in air pollution. Now, having said that, as the program has expanded, other agencies in the government, other divisions, have joined with Office of Solid Waste. This was originally, Brownfields was originally developed out of the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response. So the grants had to be associated with Brownfields. And even to this day, they need to be linked to Brownfields in some way. Now, other offices have joined. There aren't any other programs like this in EPA. There's a couple of programs that train federal workers and some in the private sector, but this is the only really job workforce development training program. So there have been other offices. For example, the underground storage tank people, different people, the chemical awareness people, spill response people, the wastewater. More recently, in the last 2 years, the Office of Wastewater has joined with Office of Solid Waste and saying we want to be part of this training program. So, and I don't know exactly what the financial arrangements are, but I expect that they may have contributed some funding into this pot that's going into this. So when you look at that RFP, you're going to see the types of training that they would like you to perform. And when you think about it, what it is it's those are the people who are supporting and helping to fund this program. It isn't necessarily an EPA environmental program funded from the Office of the Director of EPA. It's not coming out of general funds. It's coming from specific offices. So the reason why they have very specific training is those are the people who are the supporters of this program. So it is important that when you're writing and developing a program, keep in mind it's not necessarily a carte blanche environmental program. It's an environmental job development program, but it's sponsored by specific offices. Number one is the Brownfields Office and Office of Solid Waste Emergency Response. So clearly those programs that have to do with brownfields and solid waste and emergency response are going to be extremely important. Urban agriculture is very involved in it. The mine scarred lands, the freon removal. So as you go through that and they ask you the types of training that are applicable, think of it in those terms, whether it's recycling, that has to do with solid waste, whether it's advanced safety training, which has to do with chemical awareness. Those are the offices that are sponsoring it. So you don't, when we talk about landmines, you don't want to go off in some other direction. You don't see air programs in there. This year, there were some important changes from prior years. The new areas that they're suggesting you might train in is freon removal. One area that's a little scary to me, but it was in and out, it was weatherization. When we had the energy crisis, they allowed for a lot of weatherization, BPI, Institute certifications and LEED. They took it out for a year or two, and then now they put it back in. But you have to keep in mind that there's a lot of money going into weatherization from a HUD and from the Department of Energy. It's not necessarily an EPA program. The link to EPA on weatherization is if you, of course, use less fuel, you have less emissions. So there is a weak link, but this is not a primary purpose of EPA, nor is it, it's questionable of the number of jobs. There was a huge number of jobs, but it was kind of a starburst that HUD and Energy got into it and a lot of states got into it. And pretty soon, a lot of our grantees were saying that the jobs just weren't there. And we had a lot of people that were trained in weatherization, but not necessarily able to get jobs. So just in our opinion, these are just our opinions on these calls, weatherization is something that's certainly allowable, but, you know, it might be part of a broader curriculum, but you might not necessarily want to spend your whole grant on weatherization unless your community just says, we just need these jobs badly. We got a lot of them, and you can tie it to a brownfields. Urban agriculture is an interesting one that they joined the fray last year. They're very much interested in, and you saw some things about composting and urban agriculture. Mine-scarred lands has been in there for a long time, but that has a little to do with the officer radiation isn't necessarily involved, but they said uranium mining and the land-scarred mines has always been certainly an issue. One other interesting thing that came in last year was the wastewater. Wastewater is a huge job program, tens of thousands of people. On previous PLCs, I've talked about the wastewater, the people retiring. There was a big push in the 70s to build plants, and they found that the better trained they are, the better the plants and the more efficient they were. Those people are all retiring, and there seems to be a lot of jobs. The counter to that is that over those 10 years, there hasn't been any federally sponsored training programs, and as a result, there's a lot of private sector training and on-the-job training. So you would have to look in your community and see how all these retirees, and if you probably do a needs assessment, you're going to see your wastewater plants, a lot of the old-timers are retiring. The question you're going to have to ask is who's replacing those and how are they getting trained and who's training them? And if the answer might be no one, and we're going to have a real problem, and the types of people you're going to be training would fit into those jobs, it's something you may want to consider. There are many jobs in that area, and they're supporting it this year. They're supporting this training program. Spill response is an interesting area. Again, there's a little bit of caution. When you talk about spill response and you talk about emergency response, you have to keep in mind the programs that the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences have, NIEHS. And they have had a program that has gone on. It's not an EPA program. It's an NIEHS program. It's gone on for probably almost as long as the Brownfields program, and that has to do with spill response, disaster cleanup, disaster response, and their mission is to train disaster responders, first responders, and to protect workers. And it's a little different than the EPA mission. The EPA mission is to clean up the environment, but also protect the workers who are cleaning up the environment. The NIHS program works across all labor and is involved with all laborers who may get injured as a result of exposures. So it is a very slight difference, but they're two different agencies. But there's a lot of spill response and a lot of cleanup and disaster relief going on in NIHS. And so if you go into that route as your main source, you're going to have to make sure you demonstrate or show that you're not conflicting with an NIHS program in your area. You could find out if there's one fairly easy. It indicates in the RFP how you could find out who the grantees are in that area. So these are kind of those areas that you may want to think about when you're developing your overall program. Some of the other things we found that are really important to successful programs is, besides that outreach and that linking to the brownfields, linking to the WIBs, linking to the labor organizations, linking to the city, these outgoing directors or someone in the organization who's just out there communicating with all these people, it's important that they link to the brownfields. And as I had said, this is a subtle point. And Catherine from Region 4 mentioned it very subtly, that make sure that you, in demonstrating your needs assessment and what kind of community you have, you want to make sure that you indicate that there is a brownfield in your community or where the brownfields are, because this is a brownfields program. In the old days, under the original law, you could not qualify for this program unless you were servicing a brownfield. And now it's kind of broadened and blurred, and now it's an environmental job training program. But it's still important that you're involved in the brownfields program. So you want to, don't forget to mention brownfields, and it's not necessarily an EPA environmental program, it's an EPA brownfields environmental program. And you want to make sure that you also do that. Most of these programs that are really stable, they have very strong partners. They've already got their advisory board in place when they write the grant. They continue that advisory board, and those people are not only their employers, they belong to community organizations, they might have some government, some city people on there, and they can, of course, they'll demonstrate in their grant that what their advisory board is, and those people will be in the loop before you even get started. Often, they will have made an announcement at a city council meeting that they're intending on submitting a plan, and as part of the outreach section of this grant, it's extremely valuable if you could demonstrate that you had not only community meetings, but you announced in a city council meeting. One of the best tips that one of the grantees gave 1 year was, we just had one of the city council members ask us to make an announcement that we are planning on submitting a proposal to the federal EPA for a job training grant in this community, and we'd like the support of the community. And they were able to document that and put that into their grant proposal. It was a very strong point in terms of community involvement that they made that effort. It's not too early to do those types of things. So it's something again, we've observed that strong programs seem to employ as strategies of their success. And most of all, we found that all of these programs that seem to be refunded year after year, they have a very clear pathway established. And that pathway is from recruitment to training to retention of their students to placement to tracking. And they have this down. And the focus of their program has been this pathway from recruitment and flowing through their program to placement and tracking. And how do they demonstrate that pathway? A lot of it's because they've been doing this for a long time. When you have programs like Art Shanks out in California, he has been working with, and we have someone from Youth Build on the line. Youth Build is an excellent example. Now, he's got a program that they do to construction trades. Well, they've established employer relationships, and they've developed a pathway to get students in, recruiting their students, training their students, and placing them, except it's been in the construction trades. But it's a short step from expanding construction trades to include environmental trades. And using the same pathway that they used in their construction trades and applying it to the environmental pathway is extremely valuable, because he's already got his employer relationships, and he knows through the construction process some of those people that also need people to do environmental work. It's a very similar field. So he's established this, and in his grant, he's very well defines how that goes from recruitment, training, placement, and tracking. And not only another advantage of these established programs is they've got graduates who are in jobs who come back and hire more people from their programs. So they've built up an established pathway that goes through the entire program. So I think when you're writing these grants, if you keep in mind a couple of key points in your background of responding to these questions, strong leadership in terms of the director and that the outreach of how you're communicating with everybody, how you're communicating with the government, whether it's city, local, state, how you're commuting with those agencies within the government, with the WIBs, how you're with the HHS, the other aid agencies who are providing you with services that supplement the services you're performing, and they're leveraging your program. Those outreach issues and being able to demonstrate in your grant how you're doing that. The other thing is besides the strong links to government, the strong links to labor organizations. And if there is labor, particularly if you're in an urban area, you know, you need to have talked to the manager. Whoever is the local union, even if you just touch base with them and touch the union manager and just tell them what you're planning on doing, and if you can get them in on the loop, you'd be amazed. A lot of them would be very welcoming. In fact, some of them have provided in Gary, for example, the organized labor organization was leveraging and providing training facilities. So it worked out really well. They were not only encouraging the program, they were supplementing and helping them with their training. Some labor organizations actually will look at the program as a route to entry into their organization. So it's something you need to touch base in terms of that, reaching out to the community. You also want to make sure you're reaching out to the community groups. It's extremely important if it's the church, the informal leaders in the community organizations, you get find out who they are and get contacts. If you could have a meeting, and it's not too late now, even in this grant writing process, to see if you could call a meeting and invite all of the people I just mentioned to this meeting, and you can actually, at this time, have them all participate in this grant program, tell them what you're planning on doing in this community, you need their help, this is what you're doing. You need their letters of support. You need them to help you with this grant proposal. We're coming up into the last few weeks of the grant, but it's still not too late to do this. So this outreach is extremely important. And of course, that also links you to the partners. Having these strong partners, the people that you call to this meeting can become part of your advisory board. So you want to sign up your advisory board now, not later. You also want to make sure there's a link to the brownfields, identify where they're at. And then lastly, of course, you want to develop this pathway through the grant, from recruitment to training to placement to tracking. So I've done just some general ideas in terms of at this stage in your grant writing, if you're going to respond to this RFP, things you may want to keep in mind. They tend to be a little more on the general side, but they're extremely important. I think we're today, and then of course on the 3rd, we're going to talk about some specifics in terms of actual writing the grant. But there might be some people out there that have some ideas or questions or things that they found that were helpful at this stage in the game in terms of writing this grant. Does anyone want to contribute or have an idea of what they found that was something they need to stay away from at this point, or something they want to look for at this point?
Okay.
can, we have some a grantee out there that what they found out as being something that was helpful at this point in the grant writing.
This is Lynn Rippey from Youth Build Louisville, and it's not that question, but I was wondering if you could identify for me the other Youth Build programs so I could reach out to them.
There are quite a few. Every couple of states have them. We can put some of the ones who are grantees in the post-session notes.
I could check the website for the grantees. I'm sorry,
yeah.
That's a good idea.
What you may want to do is also go Youth Build and then put in your state.
Okay.
And find out if there's a Youth Build in your state. Youth Build has been really successful. We've had some grantees that have been in one part of the state, and they've partnered with a Youth Build in another part of the state. And the advantage of Youth Build is it's an established organization.
Right, we are a Youth Build. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
We are a Youth Build.
Oh, well, awesome.
Now, so that's why I was really excited to hear. I know Virginia has one of the grants, Petersburg, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay. All right. Right.
There's quite a few.
I'm sorry.
There's not only quite a few that are Youth Build that have grants, but a lot of them partner with grants. So if you're not a Youth Build, you may want to consider partnering with the Youth Build. What is your experience in recruitment, placement, training, and retention?
We've had great experience placing young people, and I was interested in your comments around weatherization because actually that's been one of our biggest placement strategies is through weatherization businesses. But I was also excited about MSD, or well, the sewer, the wastewater companies, because I think we haven't turned that rock over very much, so we definitely will do that before we put the grant in.
But weatherization
has been
extremely
good, and I think we do have the start-to-finish project, you know, from a young person really getting handle on all parts of their life in addition to strong vocational training.
Now, a grantee reviewer may look and say, and in your grant you would probably be talking about your strong construction and weatherization program, which is a lot of the construction trades relate to construction as it involves environmental technology. So, and your very strong position in weatherization is really positive. Now, what you have to be careful of, though, is that you don't get a reviewer that I pretend I'm a devil's advocate. Well, you've already got a strong weatherization program. Why do you need our money? So the question is you're going to do weatherization, but you're going to supplement that weatherization with these other programs. So now you're not only doing weatherization, but you're also doing all these other programs that EPA would like to see done, which turns your program into a super program, makes it much better. In other words, you're going to leverage everything that Youth Build has to offer in terms of placement, in terms of training and retention. You've got all of these things in place, and you're going to add this new layer of environmental training. And in fact, since you have weatherization down, you want to put that in the grant, but say that, you know, in a way, that's already leveraged. But in addition to that, you're going to expand into, say, whether it's wastewater or you're going to expand into cleanup or disaster relief. You're going to be doing solid waste or recycling types of programs. Recycling is another thing that's coming to the construction industry. The biggest problems with landfill is construction debris, for example. So you've got some real positive things you could build on with your buildings trades that you already got in place.
And lead abatement, is that, in addition to the other certifications in lead abatement, is that also?
Lead abatement is excellent. In fact, asbestos and lead abatement. And the thing about asbestos and lead abatement that EPA likes is that it's an EPA program. Both the AHERA and the lead programs originated in EPA, and our EPA-sponsored programs. So they're very important. You want to be a little careful of the work that HUD's doing in some of those areas, but again, that links very strongly to construction trades. You're right. And the whole RRP program, we find that a lot of people who are in construction trades are offering what they call the RRP. That's the renovation certification.
Uh-huh.
And you may want to look at RRP and asbestos. And those are excellent synergistic things that go with construction trades.
Okay,
absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone, let's get into a little bit about the, and you know, these are supposed to be 30-minute calls. We, on this particular call and the one 2 weeks ago, we're going to carry over a little bit longer. So anyone that has to leave, that's fine. But we're going to talk the next time about the very much the specifics of responding to this RFP. But let's, while you're in the beginning stages of writing this thing, some helpful hints to consider is, and in the briefing that EPA gave, again, Kathleen Curry said, we do not want you to repeat the questions we ask you, but we want responses from all the questions. Several years ago, a grantee actually wrote every question and every response to every question. But it was a winning proposal, but I don't think that EPA appreciated that because they didn't want everyone writing every question and writing the answer. But the issue is they do want you to respond to every question. And what one of the grantees said as a helpful hint, take every sentence apart, and whenever there's a question mark, you write that question down and you write an answer to that question. And then when you're composing and editing your grant, you incorporate all of those answers into the grant. Now, repetition is okay. In fact, it's mandatory because assume they're going to tear these things apart, and each of these ranking criteria are going to be evaluated by different people, and the reviewer may not read a previous answer to a question. So when you say in one section that you've got such and such a disenfranchised population, and you're targeting this neighborhood because there is not only a plant closure, but there's also a scrapyard and a power plant, and this is the big and a brownfield. In another question, you may have to repeat that. So that's okay. You need to do that. You don't. But I would suggest is you write every question down. And as you're in these early stages, on a big, whether it's a blackboard or on a big chart, and then you make sure that you've got an answer for every one of those questions. Then when you go back to write the grant, you're going to incorporate all those answers into your overall grant. Because, again, they have to make this subjective somehow. And I would use the assumption that they're going to grade these, and they're going to put put numerical values on every answer. And if you have no answer, you have a zero. So treat every answer as a very standalone question. Did some of the grantees that are out there, what did you find helpful when you were submitting your last grant?
This is Harriet from Sitting Bull College. What I found helpful was the partnerships. The partnerships were really helpful. So when I took over as the coordinator, I would establish meetings and get everybody together, and we just sat there and we just planned everything out, and it was just so wonderful because we had the community members in the community. We had our tribal programs because we're from a reservation. We had our tribal programs get involved, and it was just what was best for our guys, you know. So we just all hashed everything out, and it was really helpful because I just came on as the coordinator, and so they gave me more ideas and now I'm in my third cohort. This is my last one. I wrote for extension because we hadn't had the we hadn't had as many applicants, but out of our applicants in the first one, we had an 80% succession, participation. We had 80%, and then out of this last one that we did, we had a 70%. And right now, four out of my seven that graduated are all in jobs, and they're all into environmental jobs. And like right now, where we're at, our reservation is really small, and there's only so many jobs, you know. So it's like we mostly have to help them to, if they can't get a job here, we have to go off the reservation. And where our reservation is by 80 by 100 miles wide. And right now in North Dakota here, it's the oil boom. So everything's up north. All the jobs are up north. So, but as I found out going through some things and going through some strategy teams, we found out that they need their, we have the OSHA, the HAZWOP, the lead, mold, asbestos certifications, and if they were to get a job up north, they would need at least three of those. They would need their CPR first aid, their HAZWOP or HAZMAT course, and their, lead. No, not lead, not mold. I got so much things to do.
If they're working in oil, they may need asbestos.
They need, OSHA, OSHA 10.
OSHA. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they OSHA need their OSHA 10.
The general,
it's mandatory.
General
they have to have that.
Yeah, general, yeah. Everybody wants general construction or...
yes, and that's what mostly... Yep, it was all construction trades.
Mm-hmm.
So the next one, then I was looking at it because we got this thing through... I just always look in this. I'm working with a guy from job service, and he helps me to find my graduates' jobs. And so for the job, he sent me this thing, and wow, there's 900 and since. Wait, no, let me see. Let me open it real fast, and I'll tell you. Since 2000. Okay, let me see here. The oil spills. I wanted to tell you about the oil spills. There was industry spills. Since 2003, there was 206. 2010, there was 581. 2011, there's 997 oil spills in
wow.
North Dakota. And then
so,
that means, so theirs is, it's what it means is if it's anything under a barrel is not required to be reported. It says industry spills includes any spill that equals a barrel of oil or greater. Well, still it's a spill, you know. And so right now I'm trying to get my environmental guys. That's where I'm trying to get them up to the oil patch.
Excellent.
Yeah,
you've laid the groundwork for a great grant. You have to very specifically define your target group.
Uh-huh.
You've done a labor market assessment.
Uh-huh.
You've defined a curriculum that relates to your labor market assessment. You've defined your targeting population and your employers,
uh-huh.
and the challenge will be now to get that down into writing,
mm-hmm.
and other special factors. You're a micro community, so all of those things. You're a rural community, so it's really important in a case like yours to
mm-hmm.
very much explain all of those issues that they're asking for. And,
uh-huh.
That's excellent.
Even with our wastewater. Even with our wastewater, you know, I was like, you know, that pretty soon we live like probably about 4 hours from where the oil patch is. But I said, you know what, pretty soon it's going to start affecting our water, our wastewater, because I said I was asking our tribe to go and monitor to see what chemicals or what contaminants are in the water now before the oil comes down to where we are, you know, to go around to the rivers
right.
here and because we live right off the Missouri. And to go around and take samples of the water and to see if there's any contaminants or anything in the water, to take them and to that way you know you have data for if anything happens, you know, to our water or whatever. But you always have that data to back you up. And but I think it's really important that they need to do that. Somebody in our tribe. I mean, I know I
That's
can't
right.
do that with my grant, or could it be
That's
done with our grant?
Right. And your grant can be a stepping stone to something bigger. There might be additional EPA money from the state, or there might be tribal money, or there might be private sector money that some of these oil companies may pull together to get a kind of a blessing of approval that we're being monitored and that everything we're doing is okay. So you've got a wonderful program, and you've got a program that might launch into a lot of leverage money from other sources besides EPA. Excellent. And again, the challenge will be getting that curriculum down. Now, they say you can do multiple, and you're doing it. You've got multiple things in the curriculum, and you're hitting different things. So, again, the challenge you'll have is expressing this all in your grant. And what I would, again, suggest is every question that is asked, you start to scratch out a response to that question. And then the next week or so, you just start filling in the blanks so that when you put this grant together, it's not overwhelming at the end.
Yeah, because I like to talk too much, I guess. No.
No. This is what it's about, open discussion. Anyone else, any questions or things that they found that they need to be concerned about at this point?
Mike, no, but what I'd like to do is I'd like to pick, this is Ron Lee from St. Nick's in Brooklyn,
hey,
New York, but what I'd like to do is piggyback on some of the things that you've said.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, and Ron is an old-timer, runs an extremely successful program, has been in and out of the program, currently is not in the program, but you're a five-timer, aren't you?
Yes, we've done it five times, and we've got a lot of private money from doing what you need to keep this program running. But one of the things that we've found is there's three important things you need to know or need to do when you're developing a program or developing a proposal. You need to find out what the community need is, what the employer need is, and what the environmental need is. Once you're able to address those three things, then you can go into writing the rest of the proposal. But one of the things that Mike said earlier that's absolutely true, which you need to do, is you need to develop some type of advisory board. You need to talk to community groups. And one of the things that we did that we found very, very successful is that we put on board an industry expert to tell us, to point us in the right directions to go. And talk to the local unions, because a lot of times it's hard to get into the local unions. But once you have trained bodies coming out, where they save money and you give them good qualified candidates, most of ours went into the union as second-year apprentices.
Absolutely. And that forming your advisory board now, even if you're just writing the grant and never had a grant before, is really important, isn't it, Ron?
Yes, it is.
Now, you had the benefit of already having a program in place, but it was a community group. The neat thing about Ron's program is he has it's kind of a community within a very large community. You're in New York. I mean, where could be bigger than that? But your focus, you've always focused on your community, the St. Nick's, that alliance of, what, about 3 or 4 square miles that you've got all those.
It's done it right in our community, yes.
There's
plenty happening right in this community.
you got everything bad in your community except the people are awesome. You've got scrap yards. You've got Superfund sites. You've got rivers that are polluted. And of course, this is what Ron did that's really neat, and they did the same. I talk a lot about Lena Miller out in California. You've got a community within a large community, and you zeroed in on that community, and you say, this is our problem. We're not trying to target all of New York. We're trying to target 3 square miles, and here are the plant closures, and here are the empty factories, and here's our needs assessment. And you just zeroed in on a very specific community, and you told EPA, this is what we want to do, and this is how we're going to do it. And that's an incredibly successful strategy, really good. And the one problem a lot of people have is they're going to conquer the world, and for, you know, a couple $100,000, it's just not going to happen unless someone else is giving you a whole lot of money. Now, New Jersey Youth Corps gets a whole lot of other money, and they're able to cover a large area. They have like 8 or 10 different facilities, but they're getting a lot of state money, and they started out in this program, but they have expanded into a much bigger program, getting state and some labor money and different organizations giving them money. But when you're just starting out in these embryonic stages here, this technique of zeroing in onto what you can do is really...
Yeah, so I do appreciate what the, I don't remember her name, but the person from the reservation. And I think
me, Harriet.
I think it's a very good thing that you zero in on your particular community and what's there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what a need is. Once you find out the need, you know, you'll grow.
Yeah. I did my first round, I had a success story in the paper, so I was proud of that because we went and we did a project and we have some old military buildings, and these military buildings are full of lead.
Yeah.
And what we did is we went and we waited for the RFP, and they got done with that. So then my guys went and they scraped all the lead and cleaned all the ground of the soil and everything, and we turned it into a cultural center. So it's a museum now.
Good.
And
very
so
good.
Then they put them in the paper, and it was just a success story, and it really made my program look good. Made me look good, even better. Oh, no. But it made my program look good. Now what we're doing is some of my guys that just now graduated, we had a graduation on February 22nd. Three of them are already into EPA. They're doing cleanups in our communities. And what they do is they go around and they pick up all the old, everything that's all the old junk that's laying around in people's yards, and they set them out, and then they go and they pick them up. So they're doing like something like a landfill thing, throwing stuff away, and then another one. Then I got another job coming up for them. One of our teachers' quarters on our districts and our reservation burned down, so that's what we're waiting for the RFP to be done on that. And then they go down and they start cleaning up that area. And that right there, they're turning into a park. I'm pretty sure for the kids.
Well, hi, this is Mike again. I think I was cut off technically.
I don't know, but that.
Have you all still going on?
Yes, we're still here.
Yeah, Harriet's still talking.
We still have some people there. Okay. My phone got cut off. Evidently, I'm talking too much. I don't know when I was cut off, but the thing about Ron is he's one of those people who was out there. He's in the community.
That's good.
He's doing all of the things you need to do, and he zeroed in on a microcosm, micro community, and he's got his establishment in place.
Yeah.
Right
now, we're in part of what's considered a national research project, Mike. I don't know if you heard of the Corporation for National Community Service.
I've heard of it.
We are part of their research. They're trying to find out and give information to the federal government about should we put more funds in these type of programs or less funds, and do they work? So we're in the third year of this kind of research, and we'll know something soon whether they're going to put more money into it.
Absolutely. Fantastic. And I hope you're going to get back into this job training program again. This one thing is these programs, this goes on every year. They give out, 10, 12 a year, and hopefully they'll get some more money at some point. They did say, well, will the sequester affect it? And I said, well, the nice thing about this is they could eliminate one grant. I mean, one less grant. So instead of giving 12 grants, they might give 11. And so it's not like anyone's going to get cut. It's just it might be one less grant awarded. So, and if they can get some more money next year, then hopefully they'll be able to expand the program. So they expand and contract the program depending on how much money they could scrape together each year.
Right.
So
right.
It works well. Any other comments at this stage in the game? The next session we're going to have is going to be April 3rd, which will be just before the ninth due date. But we're going to talk a little bit more about what we did today and probably some last-minute tips on writing that. Some of you may have already submitted by that time. But what I would do between now and then, if you're in your process of writing your grant, everything Ron said is correct, everything we talked about. What I would do is start scoping out that guideline and start answering questions. And right now, just write an answer to every question. And the questions you don't know the answers to is something it's not too late to start getting those. If you don't have your advisory board, you can get that. I think the idea that was presented today of hold a meeting and get all your – you can kill a lot of birds with one stone, but you could accomplish a lot by if you could identify the people you want as players in this program, have a meeting, and you can talk about a lot of things. One, would they be interested in being on the advisory board? Two, this is what you're going to do. You'd like to have them help you write the grant. You need their help in these, and you're going to give them a copy of the grant when you submit it, and you need referral letters. So you can get a lot of mileage, and it's not too late now to do that if you get on the phone and start making some phone calls and have a community meeting. Don't try to get too big or get too large, but just get those groups together so you can document them. If you can get on city council announcement, do that. So it's not too late to do all of those things. So do your needs assessment. Try to document as much as you can. If you talk to people, you need to get names if you can. They're going to help you out later. So all of these things are, you're kind of in the power stage of this grant writing process. But again, answer every question, and where you have holes is where you're going to need some work next next week or two. So, well, we'll write up some of this in post-session notes and send it to everybody. If you've got additional questions, just email them to me. It's msenew@aol.com, and we'll get you some answers. If you've got some questions about it as you go along, just send them to us, and we'll be reconvening again on April 3rd. So good luck, all of you who are writing a grant, and those who have grants and are secure, thanks for mentoring. We rely on your help, Ron, and different experiences you've had in terms of working with these programs.
Thank you.
Okay, well, everyone have a good couple of weeks. We'll see you soon.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Thanks, Glo. Bye.